Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome again to Box, the show that is everything football on Macquarie Radio NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. After the news, coming up with Mark Van Aken, we'll talk for the first time on Box to Box to the Daily Telegraph's Tom Smithies on the A-League season, in particular Graham Arnold and all the topical matters around his comments this week and his defensive style of game. Of course, Dean Hennessy will be in with his weekly A-League analysis, and we'll have one of the rising stars of the game, Ollie Roux, and Melbourne Victory defender Jason Guerrier, to preview this weekend's blockbuster against the Western Sydney Wanderers and find out a little bit more about the young man from Canberra along the way. In the second hour, Gold.com's Michael Huguenin returns to the show to shed some light on the A-League's transfer system in the light of recent controversies. And of course, we're going to have a feature interview, and this week it'll be with ESPN's Jason Dacey to give us an insight into the rise of China in the international football scene. And of course, Ben Soro Perez will talk everything else that is Europe before the great Mark Van Aken returns to wrap it up with stoppage time. Michael Edgley, week 13 of Box to Box. You're sitting there pumped up for a big show, mate.
Certainly am, and it's great to be back, Rob. Really good. I just wanted to mention that we had Heather Reid last week on the show, the CEO of Capital Football and Canberra United, who during the week, yesterday, Thursday, has called quits on her career. And I think I thought we should just say well done, Heather. A great contribution to football in Canberra and the AFC Asian Cup. So congratulations, and no doubt she'll be a pretty good commentator, I reckon.
Well, she was a great commentator on the show when she was in an official role. We'll have to get her back on in an unofficial role.
I think
she might
so.
Take
she
the
might,
gloves off.
Yeah, she might take the gloves off. Hey, but it's Friday night, but the big fella, Marco, he's still feeling Liverpool's 2-0 loss to Leicester earlier in the week. I can see you're not happy, are you?
I could not care less, Michael. I have very much become a part-time Liverpool fan. I'm a disgruntled
Oh, he's happy
mate.
To pump them up when
the
they win.
City
and Jurgen
Football
Klopp's
Group
running around.
And their destruction of the fabric of world football has turned me off the Reds. But when Jurgen gets to spend his money in the off-season, we'll touch on one he's missed out on in my news segment, when he gets to spend his dollars, wake me up next season and I might be up and about.
Well, fire up right now.
I will.
Give us the news of the week.
Well, the idea that style should be prioritised over winning has been dismissed as a load of crap by Sydney FC coach Graham Arnold, who says coaches are only ever sacked for failing to get results. I won't go into this too much because we will have Tom Smithies from the Daily Telegraph to talk about this, but it is very interesting and actually some audio because, of course, Arnie is never short of something to say. So Marcello Karuska from Adelaide United had a little bit to say about the Sydney FC gaffer this week.
No, I know him. I know he's a very good coach. He likes to talk also, but he can say whatever he wants. We are focusing on us, and it doesn't matter what the other team or other coach say.
So there you go. He kind of just, in his nice little Spanish manner there, kind of just said, oh, he's always got something to say, doesn't he? So a little bit of spice in that one. And of course, meanwhile, David Carney has somewhat controversially landed back at the home of Sydney FC and has been rushed into the squad for tonight's big clash with the in-form Reds. Let's hear what he had to say this week.
I gave everything for the Jets, and I think I played a part in most of their goals they scored. So I feel like I've done my part for Newcastle. You know, I don't think at the end of it they were too harsh and standing in my way. They knew it was a better opportunity for myself, so I didn't have any really bad blood with Scott Miller at the end of it, you know. Just to get in that environment again of winning, you know, the winning feel and obviously the ambition to go forward, you know, the club, you know, probably the biggest club in Australia, so I want to be a part of that. And with the ACL coming up, you know, I've played in it before with Sydney. And, you know, they're great games. And I think with the score we've got, you know, we can really compete in that league.
He gave everything for the Jets. You got to be kidding me, haven't you?
Mm.
He caused carnage last year. Carnage.
I love his Scouse accent, given he's from Western Sydney. Anyway, moving on. And I'll pick up one point, and my old sparring partner, Tony Pignata, I'm waiting to hear. Sydney FC clearly have an edict that when they front the media, they have to tell themselves, tell everyone that they're the biggest club in the country. I'd love to know by which metric they're anywhere near the biggest club in the country. Anyway, moving on. Of course, congratulations to Melbourne City, who went through the perfect season on the weekend with a big win at Amy Park. Pepe Montemurro with his star-studded lineup. Absolutely fantastic effort. That's, was it 14-0, of course. Mm. That said, little asterisk, because in the semi-final it did take a penalty shootout to get
yes,
there.
True.
But nonetheless, not just unbeaten in 14 games, 14 wins, 0 draws, 0 losses.
And it was an entertaining game. Handy crowd there, 4,200 for the W League Grand Final. I think it says a lot about the women's game and its rise and rise.
Well, they were clearly the better team, but you know, Kai Simon's goal in the second half gave the game a bit of slate late in the game.
And good news for the Matildas during the week. They've got a free-to-air deal for their Olympic qualifiers.
Yes,
and
it is.
There was also a little piece of news slipped in that the FFA have announced that they'll be getting equal travelling rights as
well. We'll get to that, Rob. Anyway, Melbourne Victory captain Carl Valeri.
Jumping
the gun, Rob. Melbourne Victory captain Carl Valeri will miss the rest of the season due to his inflammatory brain condition. However, Victory are not yet able to reveal his exact condition, with tests continuing for the midfielder. Valeri, 31, has been doing low-intensity training in Victory's gym. However, club officials are unsure when he will be able to return to training with the team. The midfielder has had issues with his balance, which has sidelined him since the 2-1 win over Adelaide United back on November 28th.
Sounds nasty, that one, doesn't it?
It's not great. We obviously are a great Absolutely. Servant to the Socceroos and a great Australian footballer. So we hope, I guess, first and foremost, that it's health-wise he's fine before we even worry about what he does on the park. FFA has moved to lock in ANZ Stadium. For this year's A-League Grand Final, because it holds 82,000 people versus Purtex 18, mate. For this year's A-League Grand Final, should the Western Sydney Wanderers continue their impressive run and earn a right to host the decider, reports the Sydney Morning Herald's Michael Chamas. And guys, I don't know what you think about this. You're a Western Sydney boy, Rob. I just don't see. I don't love ANZ Stadium. However, what alternative do they have?
Look, the funny thing about it is, since I moved to Melbourne nearly two decades ago, the only times I've been to ANZ Stadium has been when it's been absolutely jam-packed.
Yeah.
The 2005 Australia v Uruguay, I remember being at the Olympic opening ceremony, State of Origin matches in the Rugby League and World Cup finals. So when it is absolutely heaving, it does have a great atmosphere. If you're sitting up in the back of row Z in the nosebleed section, the fact that you can't see
the other side
of the ground. Well, I have done before because I do know what the view actually is once. But look, it does have its limitations. But look, for all of the slaughtering that it cops, it does have an atmosphere and the ability to generate some real noise. When
it's a lot of fun to get out there on the train, I can tell you. It's very, it's just a seamless process.
Yeah.
That's sarcasm, Michael. Liverpool target Alex Teixeira will become the latest player to move to the mega-rich Chinese Super League in the next, well, actually, probably today, since that in fact happened. So in one of the biggest transfer deals of the year so far, worth £35 million. The stunning move, which will see the Brazilian forward join former Shakhtar Donetsk Shakhtar Donetsk to link up with Ramirez at Jiangsu Suning, comes as a huge blow to Liverpool, who refused to bid higher than £30 million. You'll talk to Jason Davey in the second hour, guys.
Jason Davey,
China is just a juggernaut at the moment, and they're talking $30, $40 million transfers. They're not just competing with the A-League now or even Japan or South Korea. They are competing with the EPL and La Liga.
Well, are we in the right spot at the right time? We've moved to Asia. We're settled into Asia. We've just won the Asian Cup. Is this the right time to be in Asia? Hopefully there'll be some reflected glory. I know we talked about this last week. Do we want the money? Well, we've got no money in the A-League, so let's jump on board, I say.
I'm fully supportive of that.
Well, the problem is, too, the FIFA rankings have just come out today. We are, in fact, last night, we are now ranked. People always look at the headlines. We're ranked 68 in the world, but we're ranked 6th in Asia at the moment, which means we could cop Japan and South Korea in the next round of qualifying.
Yeah, that's not so good, but we're also the Asian champions, so let's not...
Not according to FIFA's rankings, Rob.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, Mark, that's fantastic, mate. We'll be back with you in stoppage time late in the show. Next, Tom Smithies from the Daily Telegraph with more on the A-League and particularly Graham Arnold.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. And it's great to have the Chief Football Writer for the Daily Telegraph, Tom Smithies, on the line for the first time. Tom, thanks for joining us on Box to Box.
No problem, Jack. Good to be there.
And, mate, the main point of conversation we really wanted to talk to you about was Graham Arnold. And what an irony it is that a man who was known as Goal the Game Arnie is under the pump for his defensive tactics.
Well, yes, it was one of the great rants. It was an innocent question. Would you think winning or entertaining is more important? And I was expecting something a little bit down, you know, on the fence about how they're both important. And he just went off on one. And, you know, they said this entertaining stuff is a load of crap. Australia's lost the plot. There's all sorts of fantastic phrases in there. The point that he's trying to make all the way throughout this is that he's, number one, he's trying to develop a winning football team. But he believes that there's this perception that he's playing defensively when he'll keep quoting statistics to you, showing that he's got more attacks, more shots on goal, more chances, blah, blah, blah. It's just that people see them drop off, put men behind the ball and say, oh, you're a defensive side. And he talks about perception. The thing is, football is perception. You can have a terrible game, but if you have the last 15 minutes that are absolute ding-dong, you'll go home thinking, oh, what a great game. And, you know, we people talk about the Mariners. They went under Graham Arnold. They were a counter-attacking team. They're quite defensive, but they were so effective going forward that all you remembered was the goals. So it's a difficult one.
Well, exactly. And as fans and lovers of the game know, a nil-all draw can be entertaining. I watched the Watford-Chelsea game the other day. The first half of that was attacking a first half of football that you likely to see with no goals scored.
Absolutely. And there's beauty in all sorts of tactics. You know, there was something to admire in the way that Sydney went down to Melbourne Victory the other day and for 80-odd minutes played with, you know, brilliant defensive structure. I wouldn't want to watch it every week, but as an exercise in how to play with sort of European-style discipline, which incidentally is what Ben Kalfala said to Jacques Fatty as they came off afterwards. It was, you know, it was very good. But the problem is it won't bring fans in. It won't bring particularly Sydney fans, who we've seen with the Swans and with all sorts of rugby league teams. They like to go and see it, and the Waratahs perhaps most of all, where they like to see attacking football of whatever code. And there's a perception, certainly you feel when you go to watch Sydney FC, that they don't press from the front, they don't attack at all costs, and as a consequence, there's this perception, I keep using that word, that they're not an attractive team to watch.
You're listening to Box on NTS News Talk Sport with Rob Gilbert and Mike Ledgley. We're talking to Tom Smith, he's the chief football writer with the Daily Telegraph, and that point that you just made to me is a critical one, comparing the Sydney FC game style to other codes. And my old hometown, I grew up in Sydney, it's a notoriously fickle sporting town. Graham Arnold can have his points of view, but as you said a couple of weeks ago in one of your headlines, Sydney FC may be perfecting their defence, but it won't bring in the fans. If they lose again tonight against Adelaide, they might swap spots on the ladder. Arnie's going to be under a lot more pressure than just to defend his game style.
Absolutely. I mean, he's going to make the finals, we know that, because pretty much the top six is set. But is this the style, in that piece that you're referring to that I wrote the other day, the question I was trying to ask in that is the Sydney FC got a distinctive style that it tries to hold to? What is that style? Is it something that a big club wants to be known for, which is getting 10 men behind the ball? Now, Arnie's consistent thing is that if you look at the game, most goals in the A-League comes from defensive mistakes. And it's true to a point. So he's saying, well, if we eliminate defensive mistakes, we're going to have a great chance of winning. But week after week after week, what's the kind of football you want to go and watch? The football that Ange produced at Brisbane, the football that Kevin Muscat produced at Melbourne Victory last season, the football that the Wanderers are playing this season. I'd say those three are great examples of football you want to go and watch. At the moment, Sydney are not producing it. Let's not forget that the second half of last season, they were outstanding entertainers, partly because they couldn't defend to save their lives, so they were winning 5-4 every week, which just nearly killed Arnie. But and in fact, it was a very instructive comment he made the other day that we couldn't go on like that. And I'm thinking, why not? I mean, sure, you know, this was brilliant entertainment. But he's determined that, you know, if you keep the other team scoreless, you've got a point at least.
Tom, you know Arnie very well. I mean, is this rant, is this a bit of a symptom of maybe some underlying pressure? Not from the point of view that his job's at risk, but pressure from the point of view that, you know, the crosstown rivals pack out their stadium, Sydney's attendances have been soft. From the point of view that they're top of the table, Sydney's had some up and down results, albeit, you know, they've had some results where they've lost or drawn when they've played well. Is Arnie feeling that sort of pressure?
To a degree, and I think what he's trying to do is defend his players. He's a player's coach in that sense. Now, if you look at the individual performances of some of those Sydney players, Felipe Losco has been an extreme disappointment, just as an average player, let alone as a $1.1 million marquee. Andrew Hull has had a dreadful, dreadful start to the season, admittedly broken up by a couple of injuries and by Oli Roux commitments and things like that. We've seen nothing of Chris Normoff this season. We've lost the goals of Mark Yanko. Ninkovic is terrific to watch, but other players struggle to get on his wavelength. That's part of the problem, is that Sydney are not firing, that the players are not firing. And whether that's coaching or whether that's the individuals, I mean, Arnie's got the track record of making players play together. You look at at the Mariners, rather, he had some what you'd say were journeyman players there, and he got them playing some terrific football. You know, Daniel McMarine as a number 10. I mean, it was an outrageous idea, but it worked. And he's got the track record of making players play football. But you look at some of those players, they're just not contributing, and they're not doing what they should be doing. And I think part of what he's doing, he's trying to defend his style as a way of defending his players.
Tom, just for our listeners around Australia who don't live in Sydney, can you just explain the sort of how the two clubs coexist and what sort of rivalry exists between them? Because, you know, unlike in Melbourne where Victory dominate and City's a much smaller supported club, in Sydney it's the other way around, that the little brother has all of a sudden outgrown the one that's been around longer. I mean, what sort of environment does this sort of rivalry breed, and what sort of pressure do the clubs infer on each other?
There's a lot of pressure because they deliberately adopt different personas. So Sydney FC talk about, you know, the Sydney is sky blue, and they talk about we are Sydney, that it's an aspirational brand. The world looks at Sydney and sees the Harbour Bridge. It's all that, you know, that's their sort of style. Whereas Western Sydney are very much blue-collar, hard-working, the battlers, and all the meetings that were held in order to set the club up, that was the ethos that was drummed in from the supporters all the time. They wanted a team that would work hard and represent the region, and that's exactly what they've got. And no team works harder than Tony Popovich's sides. So they set themselves up deliberately like that. To a degree, the fans are split in a similar way. And it produces a fantastic rivalry. I would say it's a bit harsh to say that the Wanderers get better crowds. They get the best memberships, but unbelievably, a lot of those members, relatively speaking, don't go to all the games. Even in the RBB this season, they're not at maximum every week. And you're getting crowds of 14, 15,000 when you've got 16.5, whatever it is, 1,000 members. So there are people who buy memberships just go to the Derby, maybe at the Melbourne Victory game, first and last games of the season, whatever. Whereas Sydney FC's crowds are still relatively strong, and they have been over several seasons. You could argue whether they could be stronger, but they certainly, for instance, they share Allianz Stadium with a number of codes, the Swans sometimes, the Waratahs, rugby league teams, and they are the tenant that brings in the biggest crowds.
Tom, and Arnie's rant, I mean, we love it. We love talking about him. He's so entertaining. He always gives us something in press conferences. Did you smile when he started? Did you have a bit of a laugh to yourself when he started on this rant?
Absolutely. Rubbed my hands together and went, here we go. Was looking for a news line for today. And, you know, the thing is, Arnie plays the game and other coaches don't. He understands that in a city like this, let alone in a country like this, football as a code is always struggling for airtime and newsprint space. And you get a line like Australia's lost the plot or entertaining's a load of crap or whatever, it's a headline straight up, and I know that I'm guaranteed some space in the paper. And other coaches play down straight down the line. Tony Popovich is absolutely open that he leaves no hostages to fortune out there. He talks in quite general terms, won't criticise opponents, all that kind of thing. It's certainly his way of doing it. And you know, who's to criticise him when he's top of the league? But it doesn't help me sell newspapers. I've had this conversation with him. He doesn't see it as his job to help me sell newspapers. He's trying to produce a winning football team. So it's back to that thing of winning again.
Exactly right, Tom. And we started off with this question with the irony, or this interview with the irony of Arnie's goal the game Arnie nickname. And the irony is equal that he can entertain off the park, but not on it.
Yes, absolutely. And Tony Popovich, who was, you know, this absolutely the classic, resolute, maximise what ability I have sort of defender, who knew all the black arts of defending, has produced a team who are producing, you know, Spanish style, and really is the kind of football he's wanted to play from the beginning. But only now has he got the players in. Just to clarify my previous point, by the way, I was looking at the attendances. The Western Sydney Wanderers, who we talk about packing out Pirtek Stadium, are averaging 14,500, and Sydney FC at just over 16, which is down on their previous seasons, but it still shows you that they're
well. That's perception telling you and telling a story.
Absolutely, perfect.
Tom Smithies, it's been great to have you on the show, mate. Chief football writer of the Daily Telegraph. We hope to have you on a lot more in the future and talk about the issues of the domestic game.
I'd be delighted as often as you like, chaps. Thanks very much for having me on.
Thanks, Tom. Dean Hennessy with his weekly A-League roundup next.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Vox to Box on NTS News Talk Sport, and it is for Chemist Warehouse, the home of affordable healthcare for all Australians every single day with prescriptions from $5.20. And now with his analysis of round 18 of the A-League, former Notts County man and 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League, Dean Hennessy, and he is coming in with the long-run editorial on last week's Melbourne Victory Perth game.
Hi, boys. Good to see you. Good to be back.
Hello, Dino.
Hello. Hello, Edge.
You're a bit grumpy about what happened in Perth last week, I hear.
Unbelievable. Been watching this game since, I think, 6 or 7 years old. And that was the first time I've ever probably remembered a football match. And I've never, ever seen the decision I saw on Saturday night. I was gobsmacked. I was away on camp with Hume and got back to the hotel, especially to watch the game. Victory were coming on unbelievably, like from a 2-0 start, and then they've come back, got one back, and they're absolutely all over them. The end of the incident, yeah, Ben Caffalo definitely flicked at him. The boy's gone down in instalments, and part of the reason he was having a go was he thought he'd dived, and he even dived even worse. Referee, 5 yards away, sprints in within seconds, a yellow card's right in his face. So you're thinking, yeah, all right, that's fair enough. I've seen them go for red, mind you. So if he'd given him a straight red there, it wouldn't have had an issue because it's, you know, he's kicked out at him, however dramatic. All of a sudden then the camera pans away and I'm just gazing into the TV thinking, well, why are we delayed? And then we look over and he's run up 70 yards over to the linesman, and the linesman miraculously has seen something from an angle 70 yards away. What's he seen that the referee hasn't seen from 5 yards away? Pretty well with what Muskie said in his post-game interview. Just unbelievably poor.
I thought he was remarkably composed, that is Muskie, the way he responded after the game. He seemed to be able to explain it in a fairly lucid fashion. He must have been boiling at what happened.
Oh, he would have been, because they were on top. I mean, I know they even went and got the equaliser with 10 men. But then, you know, another. And it was amazing, you know, poor old Deng caused the first goal. And then got substituted, and then Nick Ansell's come on and caused the penalty. So sometimes as a coach, as you know, you can't take a trick. But it was a good performance from Victory. I mean, they got off to a very slow start. But Perth, good on them. I mean, some great goals in that game, and it was a great spectacle, even with the drama of the referee.
Well, that's the gospel according to Dean Hennessy on linesmen in Perth. So let's go to tonight's match. This is a good game, Adelaide and Sydney, because Adelaide, they get over the top of Sydney. I tell you what, they actually go on top of them on the ladder, which you know, 6 weeks ago you would have thought is not likely. But tell us about this game.
Unbelievable run, Adelaide. Adelaide have been fantastic in this run. And not only have they just been fantastic with their results, but their performances. I mean, last week they absolutely destroyed them last week. I mean, the performance was excellent. And I just think, you know, with regards to Adelaide, I think they've definitely turned the corner, and this is a big, big scalp. I mean, Sydney will be really disappointed with their defeat against Brisbane. But I think realistically now, if there's ever a chance now Adelaide can really kick into this top five, this is the week, you know, because they were a bit brittle last week, Sydney. I mean, they got pulled apart with Jamie McLaren, and what a difference he's made since he got back. So I think, you know, for me, I can't see anything but maybe an Adelaide win.
And Arnie's been pilloried in recent times for his defensive approach. Does he take the gloves off? Has he got no choice but to go and try to play for a win in Adelaide? Or is he going to stick to the method that's not really yielded a result in recent times?
Well, Broski's, I think, back or close to being back. And I think if he got him back, he might have a different mindset. But again, you go in there with a point. They've lost the boy Gers back. So obviously he's gone as well, so that's another boy that's going to be out of the equation. And look, Sydney still aren't a bad side. I mean, they had their opportunities even in that game last week, and they just then threw it away. But I just think, for me, I think Adelaide are really in tip-top form, high on confidence, the most informed team in the league at the moment, and I can't see anything but a win.
Okay, so he's tipping Adelaide, but just before we leave the Adelaide-Sydney thing, David Carney, what do you think about that signing?
Look, it's funny because Carney got hammered last year under Stubbsy.
He did, didn't he?
Newcastle, yeah. Couldn't get in, was banished to training on his own, and then they worked out you're not allowed to train on your own in the A-League.
And then it seems like it's happened again.
Well, it has, but he has been in unbelievable form. He's kept their season together, to be fair to him. And, you know, as much as whatever people think about Carnes, for me, you know, he's proven this year that he can still play at this level, because he's destroyed some of the teams. And he's been, for me, one of the biggest turnarounds from one season to another. And I know he was keen. This is not just a quick thing from Sydney. This has been happening for months and months and months. He always wanted to go back to Sydney. So I'm not surprised by it.
And we're going to talk more about that in the second hour with Goal.com's Michael Huguenin and the you know, the controversy around a lot of the recent transfer deals,
yeah, of course.
So, Dino, that is that game. Now, a massive game on Saturday night, the one that we're going to feature, Melbourne Victory versus the Western Sydney Wanderers. Jason Guerrier is going to be on the show a little bit later to talk to us about that from a player's point of view and to give us a little bit background about himself. But jump right into it, mate. Tell us your analysis of this game.
Look, it's a big game. It's they've played each other not so long ago, and obviously Western Sydney Wanderers won 2-0. The stats in this one, and I've gone really deep into the stats on this, it's, and I'm going to just put it out there from the beginning, and I'll end with the same comment. It's the first team that scores, because either of them, if they score, they win. And for me, Victory, if they get behind, they don't come back. They've only come back once this year. So for me, it's a really important one. The team who settles, who gets to the game plan that they want to adopt on the night, make sure they get out the out the barrier early. And I think the first team that scores wins. With regards to Western Sydney Wanderers last week, were unbelievable for an hour. And Melbourne City had no answer. But then, you know, City were brilliant in coming back 2 goals in a minute. And the goal from Formaroli, what a piece of finishing that was. But then, like anything, they get back in the game, and then they concede another goal, and that's obviously Melbourne City's Achilles heel, killing them. You know, they just, every time they get back into something, they throw it away again, and then they get beat, you know, 4-3. And for me, it's just, it was a game where they got themselves back in it, and Western Sydney Wanderers, I think, will be worried about the fact that they got back in so quickly and so easily. And they've got a similar lineup up top in Victory. They're quite potent with Berisha and the wide men, you know, with Ben Kafala and Barbarousis and the like. Well, not Ben Kafala, because obviously he's been pulled out. So Connor Payne, most probably, I think I've read today, might go back into the squad. Well, he's definitely in the squad. Whether he starts is another thing. But I think it's going to, the main battle is going to be mainly in the midfield. I think whoever wins that midfield has got a big chance of winning the game.
Dino, Western Sydney have conceded half their goals from set pieces. So Guy Finkler, he'll be on notice, won't he?
He will. I mean, that they've had problems with that, and they've also had problems down their right. As much as Western Sydney have scored most of their goals from the right, and that's been generally down to Castellin and the way he drives. We've talked about this when we previewed Western Wanderers before. It's not that so much. I think Scott Neville's a bad defender. I just don't think he gets the cover, because I think he's always 2-on-1, and especially if they overload wide areas. And a lot of Victory's goals have come from their left. So it's all pointing. It's going to be who wins that battle on that right and left from their side, who can win the midfield to control possession and get it out to these really dangerous areas. And for me, it's really the ones that settle first, get the game plan right, are going to be the ones who are going to come out smiling at the end.
You're listening to Dean Hennessy on NTS News Talk Spot. This is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. The tactical approach between Muskie and Popper. How does that work out, mate?
Look, I mean, Popper, I mean, I think they're both very good coaches. They've both got totally different ideas about certain things. I mean, from Muskie's point of view, sort of about Muskie, they're at home. They've got an unbelievable home record this year. And they've got a lot of games coming up. I think eight out of their last 10 games are in Melbourne. So it's going to be hopefully a good start for them. They've had a good run recently. They only got beat last week, but up until then there were 5 games unbeaten from that 4-week game where they were on that stretch. I think Muskie will try and get the ball into wide areas, get overloads in wide areas, expose their fullbacks. And I think also if they can get the ball to Berisha, we know how potent he is. I mean, on edge, yeah.
So you're tipping Melbourne Victory to win. Is that what you're doing?
Well, I think I am, and it's only because I just think that their home form has been really, really good. And last week was a blip, and they, you know, we've all gone 1-0 down, 2-0 down, but then to come back like they did, and they really, really should have won the game last week in Perth. Had, you know, they're not lost a man. So I'm confident that Victory will come back and get a result.
Well, the other game tomorrow is the earlier game at 5:15 at Suncorp Stadium. It's Brisbane Roar versus Luis Sanchez.
I think Edge was right. I think he's trying to make a point that he did.
Luis Garcia. I mean, Luis Garcia. I tell you what, that goal that he scored with a back heel in New Zealand, worthy of mention.
Well, it is, and I think I might have to eat my words, because when we discussed him coming over, and I think one of you two guys said, "What do you think, Dean?" Mm. I think at 36, 37 years old, you're thinking, "What impact? He's not been full time for 2 years." So on the flip side of that, I'm going to pose another issue, that if he can do that with 2 years out of the game, have we come that far?
Well, I mean, it's he's made an impact in all the games he's
Unbelievable
played.
Impact. Yeah. And he's been brilliant and very, very good value. He looks fit for the spell he can
survive. Looks like he's leading the younger players as well.
You can't get rid of class.
And the feedback from the rooms has been positive, hasn't it? He's playing with a smile on his face. He's a leader. These young guys really look up to a hero like that.
Well, they've got somebody who can get the ball and get it to them. Mm. And people like Austin are thriving on it because he just finds Austin all the time with his power and strength.
And if Wormsley keeps using him off the bench like he does at the moment... if it's 0-0 or even 1-0 down with 20 minutes to go, they're still in the game.
I think that the biggest thing for me in this game is the difference that Jamie McLaren has. And, I know we harp on and I know he's a local lad and we know him well, but you can't beat what he does. He's made such a difference coming back. They struggled while he was away. They didn't win a game. They got beat heavily in a lot of those games. And now all of a sudden he's back. And they've just gone away to Sydney and battered them. And he was unbelievably good last week. And what he gives them an out. Every time the back four plays forward, he's an out. He'll stretch them and really make the pitch big. In weeks prior to that, when he and Barella weren't there, they couldn't do that. And all of a sudden, they'd get penned in and they would block the channel so they'd come back. Then they'd lose possession and they got conceded goals. But for me, Brisbane... they're in the second spot. They'll win. But I think Central Coast will make it hard.
Very quickly, Sunday's games in Wellington, the Phoenix and Perth. Just a result, Dana.
Yeah, look, for me, Perth. Perth are on a roll now.
And obviously at the Hunter Stadium at 5 p.m. on Sunday, Newcastle Jets and Melbourne City.
Could be ugly. I think Melbourne City will come and bounce back and Formaroli will roll them.
Dino, it's always been great to talk to you, mate. Good to have you back in the studio again today.
Great to be back in the studio. It's much better in here than out there.
Good on you, mate. Next up, Melbourne Victory's Jason Guerrier on Box to Box, NTS News Talk Sport.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
And welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. Thanks to our great friends at Chemist Warehouse, where the lowest prices are available every single day. And Canberra's Jason Guerrier has packed a lot into his 22 years. After earning a spot in the AIS squad, he first signed with the Brisbane Roar before Ange Postecoglou brought him to Melbourne, where he's established himself as a key player in the Melbourne Victory defence. Thanks for joining us, Jason.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
No worries, mate. And there's been plenty of highs and lows in your career so far. More highs than lows, fortunately. Winning the Premiership Championship double last year and coming off the bench in the grand final, obviously a high. But the Oli Roos attempt to qualify for Rio, the opposite. But I really wanted to get started with that moment where, reading some of your background, you really felt that that you belonged that night in 2013 against Liverpool at the MCG on the park with names like Steven Gerrard and Luis Suarez. That was a real special night for you and gave you a lot of confidence.
Yeah, that night was, still thinking about it now, it's pretty surreal, you're standing in a tunnel next to, the likes of Steven Gerrard and Martin Skirtle, Raheem Sterling plays you, you're watching every late night, Saturday nights and Sunday nights on the telly, and standing next to them, and outside is the MCG filled with 95,000 people. That night was amazing, and I think for a lot of us, especially us younger boys that were in that team, like myself, Scott and Connor and Nick and Jesse, it served as a platform for us. We really took a lot out of that game, and I think boys really have improved in leaps and bounds since that game. It gave you a lot of confidence, performing like we did against, a team like Liverpool on a stage like that. Yeah, it was a very special night.
But for a young guy like you, you're 22, you were 19 back then, and obviously aspirations and dreams around your career. Did it give you rise to think perhaps Europe's a destination that I want to get to? Is that something that's been a dream for you throughout your life?
Yeah, of course. And I think even the games that have happened, post that initial Liverpool game involving the other clubs, Liverpool's come back and you had Juventus come here, Manchester United come here, and when they do play A-League teams, they're contests, they're not just walkovers. I think, the standard of football in Australia is improving, and myself personally, I thought after that night, that Europe's definitely a place I want to go in the future, and to be able to test myself against, the wingers that night were Jordan Ibe and Raheem Sterling, to be able to mark players like that night was a test for me, and it was something that, I relished, and after doing that, it definitely, I think I've got nothing but, belief that, I really do want to go and pursue, something in Europe one day. When that day comes, I'll definitely want to take the opportunity.
Jason, obviously, as a young fellow growing up in Canberra, you like every other young footballer, you would have watched the Premier League, and all of a sudden, at 19 years of age, you're walking out in front of almost 100,000 people at the MCG, and you'll never walk alone. The rendition of that night was amazing. Did you mentioned the young group of players that were on that night. Did you sort of look around and think, is this a dream?
Yeah, it did look, you know, I think just standing, you know, walking out with the team and then standing in the lineup and hearing the crowd sing that in unison, you know, 90,000 people. People travelled from all over Australia, all over Asia, you know, to come to that game and to hear them, you know, sing that, and then to look to the left of you and see, you know, Steven Gerrard standing there. Like, it was something, especially for someone like me, you know, that's something that I never ever thought would happen, you know. So, it was just a surreal moment. I was just very, very lucky to be a part of it.
Well, you grew up in Canberra, we mentioned that, but now can you confirm something for us? I think we read that your mum and dad both were from Uganda and they met at university in Canberra, and the end result is you.
Oh, something along those lines. My father was studying in Canberra, and he actually met my mother in Uganda, but okay. he brought her over with him on his after he finished his studies, and when he decided to relocate back here, yeah, he brought her over there, and we settled in Canberra, and my family was, my siblings and I were all born and raised there, and yeah, it's a really nice place. I think it gets a bad rap from
No, no, Canberra's a great spot. And just tell us about how proud your mum and dad are. You know, you've represented Australia distinguishedly at age levels and the Oly Roos. How proud are your mum and dad? They must feel very special about that.
Yeah, they're very happy. And I think the thing is, they've always, you know, told me to enjoy my football first, and you know, concentrate and work hard, and wherever I do get to, I know that they've never put pressure on me, or have never, set ridiculous targets for me to hit. They're just happy that I'm doing what I want to do, and you know, I'm having these successes in what I want to do. So they've always just shown me a lot of support. Them and my siblings have shown me a lot of support, you know, throughout my footballing journey. And yeah, it's just good to have them around. To have this to share this with them is something that I appreciate, because they've, you know, put a lot of time and effort into getting me Ryan for that.
That's fantastic. Jason, let's talk about the Oly Roos, because I think every Australian football fan had expectations that we would do well. I don't think anybody thought we would get booted out after the group stage. You yourself, you're an unused substitute against UAE. You came off the bench against Vietnam, and you started in the game against Jordan. Can you just explain to our listeners and followers of Australian football how you felt through the tournament and just how disappointing the results were?
Obviously, you know, it was very, very disappointing, you know, not qualifying for the Olympics. It was, we went in with really high expectations, and we thought we were going to do well, and I had no doubts that with the players that we had, and even with the guys that weren't released from the clubs, the guys that did fill in their spots were, I thought, more than capable of doing a job. So, you know, to not qualify was very disappointing, but it was a great experience to be a part of, and you know, football at that level, it's so ruthless. Those games, they're all one-off games against teams that have just completely contrasting styles, and you have to adapt to that. You have to learn to, you know, get those moments. You have to take them, because like you guys saw, it was each game was, you know, decided with one goal or no goals, you know, so it was hard for us to adapt to, I guess, but I guess it's behind us now. I guess all the thing, you know, us players can do is just learn from that, and I know more than the bulk of that squad have aspirations to play for the Socceroos, so that's what we have to now focus on, you know, and I know no one in there, they didn't want that to be their last time representing the country, so I think the positive of that is you're going to see those players, you know, pushing really hard in their clubs, you know, because I know no one doesn't want to wear the green and gold jersey again. I definitely want to wear it again, and I know all the other boys do too, so...
You're on Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. We're talking to Jason Guerrier, Melbourne Victory rising star and campaigner with the Ollie Roos. And we can hear that disappointment in your voice, mate, and we share that disappointment. And it's easy to rake over old ground, but you did make that point about playing random styles against different teams and throwing the squad together. And no one really wants to put the boot in anymore and make anyone feel any more disappointed than they are, because you are the guys that were out on the pitch doing everything you possibly could do to get it done. So congratulations on the campaign. We're disappointed for you, but clearly there's a long journey ahead in football. And we come to your Victory career, and one of the real moments, we talked about your time on the pitch at the MCG against Liverpool, but one of your heroes growing up was Carl Valeri, and coming to the club and playing at the club where he unfortunately has had such a difficult time this year, it must have been a real special moment for you to come along to the Victory under his guidance.
Yeah. Carl was just a guy, like, growing up in Canberra, he was the one that, you know, when I was coming through, he was the one that was in Europe and playing for the Socceroos and playing in the World Cup and the Asian Cups. And he's actually from the same area I'm from, which is Tuggeranong. So, he was someone to look up to. And, you know, when we did hear the news that he was coming back to the club, it was sort of a bit funny, you know. Just I don't think he'd know the light that he was seen in as for, like, us Canberra youngsters. But to have him at the club is, we learn so much off Carl. He's such a seasoned, experienced player, and he's very smart in how he, you know, approaches a game and conducts himself. And I've learned a lot from him, and I know I've benefited heaps from having him at the club. So yeah, I'm very happy that I've had this opportunity to play with him.
And how has he been around the club recently with his illness? It's been obviously unfortunate, and hopefully something that he gets over quickly and comes back for the new season.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate for him, you know, and I know everyone was, you know, dreading to hear that news. You know, Carl's such an important player to the team, and we all should have so much respect for him, and we love having him around the club. And, his presence is still there, which is good. You know, he's around the boys, and we get to see him every day, and he's in very good spirits. So it's good having him around the club, but I think his health comes, you know, first and foremost, is getting him, you know, all right medically, and I think that's the main priority. So I think that's how they reach their decision. So however long that takes, the club's gonna, and us players, we're all gonna be behind him, and I'm wishing him well and hoping he gets better.
Well, that's good to hear. It's good to hear that he's around the club and around the boys, mate. Massive disappointment last weekend against Perth, making that comeback and then losing, not even able to take away a point. You've obviously got the rounds of the kitchen from Muskie and major expectations tomorrow night.
Yeah, definitely. You know, very disappointed to, you know, lose that game over in Perth. The conceding those goals so quickly, and the goals that were definitely preventable. Yeah, that was disappointing, but I felt like we did show character to, you know, fight back to get it to 2-2. Even with 10 men, I felt like we were dominating the game, and we were a team trying to win the game. And it was unfortunate to concede a penalty like that in the end. Especially how it did get called. You know, it was a bit disappointing, but I think we have to take positives out of that game. You know, I think boys, you know, we fought. We fought as long as we could, and unfortunately we didn't get the result, but we have to regroup, and I think all focus has been since that game on Western Sydney tomorrow, and yeah, so that's what we're looking forward to now.
Yeah, and a big chance for a victory at home in front of a big crowd at Etihad Stadium. So hopefully for you guys, you can get the job done. Jason Guerrier, it's been great to have you on the show, mate. You're a rising star. We hope to watch your career over 10 years or so to come at least, and watch you do good things with the Victory and your international career as it goes on, mate.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jason. It's been great talking to you.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. This hour we talk to Jason Dacey, leading Australian journalist from ESPN and expert on football in Asia in general. In particular, the World Game to give us an insight into the rise of China as an international force. And Ben Sora Perez, of course, will be in with the latest in the European football and the Premier League, especially before Mark Van Aken returns with stoppage time. But first up, Goal.com's Michael Huguenin on the line to talk to us about the A-League transfer system in light of the recent headlines around Anthony Caceres and David Carney. Good to have you back on the show, Michael.
Thanks a lot, Rob, and good evening to Michael as well.
Hi, Michael. Well, let's start with your analysis of the transfer window, in particular, some anomalies that if the A-League officialdom don't get their heads around, it could become a bit of a problem.
Yeah, so I guess my piece this week has bounced off some of the criticism that's come from more people than just myself surrounding Anthony Caceres' transfer in particular, but also this ongoing kind of problem, I guess, that or many people see it as a problem, of A-League clubs not being able to pay transfer fees to each other. And as we saw towards the end of the transfer window, David Carney was mutually released from his contract by Newcastle Jets. But their club statement when they released him sort of seemed to indicate that in reality his position there had become untenable. They knew that they weren't going to get out of him what they wanted because he just wanted to leave. And this is the other side of the coin of this no transfer fee issue, that a club like Newcastle Jets, you know, they had David Carney, and some people don't really rate David Carney, and that's fine, but the reality was that he was one of their more important players, and suddenly, because he had decided that he wanted to leave the club, they were almost, it felt like they were forced into releasing him for the sort of good of squad harmony, and then Sydney FC get to sign him for free. And so that's sort of a concept that people have been looking into over the course of this transfer window, because, of course, in Anthony Caceres' case, it sort of felt like in the end that Manchester City effectively paid the transfer fee on behalf of Melbourne City. Now, this is allowed in the rules as they stand, but there has been talk that the FFA are looking to perhaps review their transfer regulations at the end of the season. Now, this is a good idea, but I spoke to Hume City's coach, Lou Achevsky, about a sort of similar sort of concept, and essentially his argument is that that's fine if you need to make some changes to A-League transfer regulations, go ahead, do it, but there also needs to be some changes made at grassroots level.
So talk to us a little bit about the changes he suggests, mate.
Yeah, so the main issue is that for the clubs below the A-League, if they have a player on a professional contract, not all the players who play in the NPL for the NPL clubs are on professional contracts. Some are effectively amateur players, but if they are on a professional contract, the NPL clubs are limited in what kind of transfer fee they can request when they're selling these players onto A-League clubs, and that is 50% of the base salary for the remainder of their contract. Now, the reality is many of these contracts are perhaps only a year long, at probably a maximum 2 years. So you're looking at some fairly insignificant amounts of money. And considering the amount of effort that the NPL clubs put into trying to develop younger players, progress their own club, to then sort of, as Lou Achevsky puts it, be cornered in the situation where they effectively have no say in how much this player is worth to them is unfair. And I think going from both the A-League standpoint, we were talking about Carney and Caceres, and then looking at it from the NPL standpoint, there were some regulations that were put in place when the A-League started. Perhaps there was some logic to them at the time, but now it's becoming very clear that there are unfair elements at all levels. And I definitely think that Achevsky has a decent argument in saying that the FFA should be looking at this and trying to make the system fairer for those who are at times, you know, developing these players. They should get some sort of decent reimbursement when those players are looking to move on.
You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app. And you can also search for NTS on TuneIn Radio or for our good friends at Chemist Warehouse. We're talking to Michael Huguenin from Gold.com. Now, mate, you've given us an analysis of the transfer issue as it stands right now and Luachevsky's observations. You've analysed this whole scenario in detail, as many others within the game have. The question I've got for you, mate, is do you think that the Melbourne City situation around Anthony Caceres in particular has almost forced the FFA's hand, because they've done it once, they could clearly do it again, and given their ownership structure, as unique as it is within the A-League, what's to stop them from doing it again if the FFA don't make some changes to allow other clubs to be able to negotiate and transfer in the same way that they did or a similar fashion?
I think absolutely that FFA either were either blind, you know, potentially they were blindsided, or at least they suddenly realised that they were in this situation that they couldn't really avoid. Now, you may remember that there was a story about Melbourne City looking to loan Frank Lampard for a time before last season, around the same time that they were having David Villa on as a guest player. Now, the way that the FFA denied that was that they were saying that the entirety of a player's contract, even the amount of money that might be being paid by the parent club, has to be factored in when it's a loan deal. Now, the reason why this didn't affect the Anthony Caceres deal is that Caceres, from what everyone is seemingly understands, wasn't on a lot of money at the Mariners. So even though he may have received some form of a pay rise by moving to Manchester City, it's still a relatively reasonable amount of money that allows him to move to Melbourne City, and it doesn't affect his salary cap. Now, in the future, I think they absolutely have to look at some sort of way to allow A-League clubs to pay transfer fees to each other. And I also think that it's about time that we start to look at this competition as a maybe not mature competition, but it's becoming a more mature competition. And as such, we need to sort of perhaps, you know, take the training wheels off a little bit and allow these clubs to, you know, try and build their sides as they see fit. Now, we don't want to see clubs going bust financially, but, you know, if they've got a little bit of extra money to spend and there's a player playing for another A-League club, then why shouldn't they be able to pay a transfer fee, which also benefits the club that is losing the player, and in the long term, you know, makes the whole process seem a little bit fairer.
Michael, tell us about some of the specifics of some of the moves in the A-League this week. In particular, I'm interested to talk to you about David Carney. Phil Stubbins, the Newcastle coach, last season came under awesome criticism, really, for his treatment of David Carney. But in a strange sort of way, Scott Miller did something similar last week. So I just wanted to get your reflections on that process and, you know, whether David Carney's move is actually good, a good outcome for Newcastle.
It seems, if you read between the lines, that at times David Carney's personal aspirations and the aspirations of the Newcastle Jets have not always been aligned. Last season under Phil Stubbins, and with the Nathan Tinkler ownership situation going on, there were clearly some issues at the club that go beyond whether or not Phil Stubbins and David Carney got along. That both of those individuals may not have showered themselves in glory during that time. Only those who were behind the scenes will really know what went on. But whereas last season I think there was a lot of talk and sort of interpretation of it as Phil Stubbins is the bad guy, the players are doing the right thing, it seems that the way that David Carney has potentially sort of forced this move through to get to Sydney FC, and some of the comments he made about the club after he left have not necessarily, or have perhaps indicated that Phil Stubbins's, or that there was more to the story last season than we perhaps thought. Is this a good move for Newcastle Jets? It doesn't help them from the day to day. You know, Carney again was a key player in the way that Miller was setting his team up. Will it benefit them in the long term? It does sort of seem like there was some antagonism within the squad there, and I think they may look back on it as not such a bad situation. Let's face it, David Carney in the end is moving towards the end of his career. You can understand why he wants to move to a club like Sydney, where potentially he could win a bit of silverware. He gets to play in the AFC Champions League this season. These are the types of things that you're trying to do towards the end of your career, you know, make the most of it. Newcastle, they're on a bit of a longer-term project. Losing someone like David Carney may not end up hurting them that much in the long run.
Michael, thanks again, mate. And unfortunately, though, the more you talk about these transfer deals, the more complex they seem to get. You can never really unpick the detail and come out with a clear analysis, can you? Because every single individual instance is a different example in itself. Just so hopefully the FFA can get onto this, find a clear set of rules that everybody can play by so that the A-League's teams can transfer within clubs and that clubs at the lower levels can earn some money out of rising stars and talent that they generate.
Absolutely.
Good on you, Michael. We'll have you again on Box to Box real soon. That was Goal.com's Michael Huguenin. Next up, Jason Dacey from ESPN Asia.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. And in recent times, the growth of the game in China has been a headline story around the world. And when the BBC Sport website leads with a story about Chelsea's Ramirez closing in on a £25 million payday with the team that finished ninth in the Chinese league last year, you know something big's happening. So to give us a close-range view on where football in China is going, Jason Dacey from ESPN Asia joins us after a globe-trotting career in the States and the UK. Former Sydney-sider Jason has spent most of the last 15 years covering sport in Asia and is as well-equipped as anyone to comment. Welcome to Box, Jason.
Thank you, guys. Good to be on the show.
And that article I mentioned, mate, it comes from the BBC. You worked with the BBC and you were the first Australian to host a show on BBC TV, as I note on your bio. The headline, How China is Attracting Some of the World's Top Footballers and Managers. As a guy who lives and breathes and makes his living in Asia, how do you observe it from that end?
Look, it's just turned the whole football world upside down, hasn't it? Because here we have records being broken almost every day with big name players, not old players, but players under the age of 30 heading to China for record amounts of money, beating Premier League clubs, you know, whether it's Liverpool, Arsenal, Tottenham. The Chinese Super League's only been going since 2004, and here we have players looking at China as a genuine option to further their careers. And I actually think it's exciting for Asian football, and I think it really can take China to the next level and maybe even affect some Australian players looking for prospects across Asia too.
And coaches of the likes of Marcello Lippi, Fabio Cannavaro, Sven Goran Eriksson, Big Phil Scolari, when you can attract those sorts of names to a league, you're clearly doing something right.
Yeah, there's a lot of money there for the coaches, and I think especially ones like Sven Goran Eriksson, he's done a lot in club and international football. There he is at Shanghai SIPG, and a friend of mine, Ian Walker, is the goalkeeping coach there. You might remember him from his days with Tottenham and England. He was a long-time keeper at White Hart Lane, and he works under Sven there. And he said, look, it takes a while to get used to the way they do things in China, but if you can get there, you can get settled, you can make some really good money, and also maybe try and help the sport develop. And he was working with a couple of the keepers that were in the Asian Cup last year. And, you know, he's seen all sorts of players come through the China over the years, whether it's Didier Drogba or Nicolas Anelka. But now we're getting to a whole different caliber of player, younger player that's coming to China to really get that payday and maybe take Chinese football to the next level.
So that next level, where do you see it sitting in the international sphere of things?
Well, the amazing thing is that, you know, China have only qualified for one World Cup, and that was in 2002. And they're trying to qualify, as we know, for 2018. They're not in very good shape. It looks like they probably won't make it. So the benchmark really for success for China is team sports, national sports, and how they do in World Cups or Olympics. And Alain Perrin is now the coach of China, as you probably know, the former Portsmouth and French league coach.
And, you know, he's trying to build something in China. But I think that's going to be the big question. Are we going to see an improvement of the Chinese team at international level? We saw the Asian Cup last year, that quarterfinal between Australia and China, I think was the most watched game on Chinese television ever. More than 30 million people were watching that game. So it gives you an idea of the scope of interest. But are we going to see the national team really take that next step? And are we going to see the Chinese Super League bet in for a number of years to become a great league across the world?
Jason, you follow Asian football closely. I mean, from Australia, we've always rated the J-League in Japan and the K-League in Korea as sort of being the benchmark for Asian football. With these sort of signings and the sort of players that are going there, how do you rate the Chinese Super League up against, you know, those established competitions in Korea and Japan?
Well, I think it's a step below the J-League and the K-League. And we've seen Chinese teams, of course, you know, with the exception of Guangzhou Evergrande, not doing so well in the AFC Champions League. So that's usually the best measurement. Of course, you know, Guangzhou Evergrande won two of the last three AFC Champions League tournaments, and the Western Sydney Wanderers won the one in between that. So I'd say it's a step down, but it's going to get stronger and stronger, and even the Chinese second division is going to be, you know, getting strong, because some of those players that were playing in the top flight and will now have to go to the second tier because of the influx of foreigners. And we see the five foreigner rule in China. That's four foreigners plus an AFC player, which can be an Australian player, of course, as you know. So, you know, the caliber of player is getting very much better. Let's hope that the Chinese Super League will take the next step. Of course, we have had corruption scandals not so long ago in China that definitely affected the public perception of the standard and the interest, but that seems to be now in the past. And the attendances, you know, are now more than 20,000 average for the Chinese Super League, which gives you an indication of just where it's headed.
You're listening to Box on NTS News Talk Sport with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. We're talking to Jason Dacey from ESPN Asia about the rise and rise of China in international football and the point you just made about corruption in the Chinese game. You're confident that the corrupt elements have been gradually weeded out. You could never say anything for sure, but you look at the recent Australian Open tennis and the way that corruption overshadowed that tournament. But you're confident that it's a more legitimate league these days?
Definitely, yeah. They've cleaned it up a lot. You know, there was a lot of harsh sanctions that were taken by the Chinese Football Association against match fixers. I think the fact that it's becoming more high profile means that it's a lot less less easy to fix games. And in the old days, football in China wasn't watched that closely, and there were a lot of games going on that people weren't paying a lot of attention to. But I think now, with better caliber of players, more scrutiny, more television coverage, you know, the amount of money they're spending now for television coverage in China is mind-boggling. It's sort of quadrupled in just a couple of years. So, yeah, I think it's cleaned up. Of course, you can never say for sure, because we know the Chinese culture, they really love betting, and that often is the way that they show interest in a sport, is through betting. It's a huge betting culture, a betting country, just like Australia is. But I think generally it's definitely a lot cleaner than it was.
But as much as they love betting, they also hate to lose face. And when they would have seen the international headlines around their domestic competition, you can be sure that some pretty significant power brokers would have stepped in to take some of the heat out of it.
Yeah, indeed. And in fact, the Chinese president, he's a big football fan, and he's closely watching everything that's going on. And many people are attributing the success and growth of Chinese football to him, because he's taken a personal interest in it. And certainly, as you say, China does not want to lose face in the way that it has when it comes to match fixing and corruption controversies. But many of the Asian leagues have had problems with match fixing, whether it's the K-League, whether it's Southeast Asian leagues, where we've seen a lot of problems there as well. But I think overall, you know, China football is heading in the right direction.
What sort of news, what sort of impact did the signing of Jackson Martinez? It was £32 million, Guangzhou Evergrande. What sort of impact did that have in Asia, Jason?
Well, it made a big impact. I'm in charge of the Southeast Asia edition of ESPN FC, used to be known as Soccernet, and, you know, it's our lead story about him signing and the fact that we had Premier League clubs that were interested in him. He's coming from Atletico Madrid, you know, he used to play at Porto. It's a £31 million deal. He's only 29 years of age. You know, he's a big star. You know, I think he moved from Porto for about £25 million. So and that's just less than a year ago, and it's already gone up to £31 million. And he's just one of many high-profile players that have gone to China. We talked about Ramirez, you know, Jovinho, who we saw at Arsenal and Roma. It's just gone completely out of control, and makes you wonder, you know, who's going to be the next one. And I think the difference is that for players like Steven Gerrard or Frank Lampard or Thierry Henry, they don't need to go to China to get that payday. They're going to go to MLS because they want the standard of living. But the other players, they definitely do want to get the kind of money that you can make at the Chinese Super League.
Jason, just for Socceroos fans, which is their primary audience, what's your take on Tim Cahill's move and his form and the impact that he made? I thought it was an astute commercial move by Tim to grow his brand into China. But I'm just interested to see your views on how he's been received and what sort of impact he's having.
Yeah, look, I think Tim Cahill, you know, remember he's 36 years of age now.
Yep.
And he's not at the height of his career that he was at Everton, but he's done pretty well in China. Of course, he did score those goals against China in the AFC Asian Cup quarterfinal and made his star even bigger in China. So I think he's done reasonably well. I think New York Red Bulls, perhaps he was a bit disappointed how it finished there. You know, he didn't do badly, but I think certainly it's just amazing that he's still scoring goals. He's still a star. And he's still the man that Ange Postecoglou will look to score goals for the Socceroos as they try and head towards Russia 2018.
Jason Dacey, mate, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Time has gone just a little too quick for us. We'd love to have you back on the show again from ESPN Asia to talk more about the growth of the game in our own backyard.
Yes, indeed, guys. And I'm actually talking to you from Singapore, where Jermaine Pennant, the former Liverpool and Arsenal winger, is due to make his debut quite soon, in a competitive debut. He's already played in some trial matches. So it's definitely a fun scene to talk about. I'd love to come back on the show another time.
That'd be fantastic, mate. We'll definitely have you back on in a few weeks' time. We'll talk more about the very subject of football in Asia. That was Jason Dacey from ESPN Asia. Next, Ben Soro Perez with his roundup of football in Europe.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. And make sure you know what you're putting into your body by using INC supplements. All INC products have informed sports approval, which means that every batch is tested for WADA banned substances. And you can buy them, Ben, at Chemist Warehouse, as I know you do on a regular basis. And when I say Ben, I'm talking about Ben Soro Perez. He's back in the studio for his weekly insight into the English Premier League and Europe in general. The former Brighton and Hove Albion insider, Benny, welcome back again.
Thanks very much, Rob. Great to be here.
All right, mate. So we've had a couple of days of English Premier League off the back of the Cups weekend. Where do you want to start?
Well, I don't think it matters where I want to start. And can't stop Edge talking to me off air about Leicester.
So well, last week, you were pretty negative about him. And Vardy scored an impressive goal during the week. And they stitched up Mark's team, Liverpool. And they're 3 points top of the table. We've hit February. In the last 11 years, the team that's on top of the table at the start of February has gone on to win the whole thing. I said to you last week, can they win the whole thing? And you said no.
We've been asking him that since we started the show, and he's been
maintaining. I'm on the bandwagon.
Well, mate, I wanted to ask Ben, is the bandwagon big enough to contain Michael Edgley? I mean, he's the greatest bandwagon jumper. Next week, I'm waiting for the day he's going to walk into the studio with a Foxes t-shirt on.
No, I'm thoroughly enjoying the whole story.
Yeah,
and
it's
thoroughly
a great
enjoying
story.
The, you know, it's fantastic. And I know Ben will talk about it in a moment, but I thought Roy Hodgson's reaction to the goal in the grandstands was great. I think everything about it is good.
Ben, tell us about the goal. This is the Jamie Vardy goal. He scored a brace against Liverpool.
Yeah, it was... Well... It's a contender for goal for season straight off the bat. You know, let's be honest with it. You don't. It's one of those ones that, you know, he could hit that another 10 times. It's not going to go in. I think Liverpool fans would point that, you know, questionable positioning again from Mignolet and all the stuff that goes on with that. But it's a tremendous hit. You know, he takes it first time. I think Mahrez, you know, lumped the ball up to him anyway. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those goals that you just have to stand up and applaud. You may not be a Leicester fan. I'm not a Leicester fan, but it was remarkable, and the Jamie Vardy season of dreams continues, it seems. I don't think he can do any wrong at the minute. And I was
don't forget about his partner in crime, Mahrez, 13 goals this year.
Yeah,
he's a pretty important player.
Personally, I think Mahrez is the better player.
Yeah, so do
I think he brings a lot more to the team. I know Vardy's scoring the goals, and that's what gets your name in the papers. And especially with England's situation, you know, Rooney hadn't been scoring. Kane was iffy. There were the friendlies Vardy didn't play in, and he had these opportunities. So, you know, I can understand why the press are all over him, why they love him. But for me, Mahrez is the better player. And I think he'll be the one that they'll struggle to keep hold of in the summer, depending on, obviously, the money that they're going to plough in. But if they finish in the top four, which I think...
If they win the Premier League, sell them all.
They're not going to... I stand by my conviction. They're not going to win the Premier League.
Well, this huge game on Saturday. So tell us about it.
Yeah, so they take on City in the early game on Saturday, which is huge for a number of reasons. Leicester are 3 points clear of them at the top of the table. Obviously, win here and that becomes 6 points. And that's huge, you know, from this point on, whether or not they have the experience to hold on to it or not. So I think City will definitely go for this. I think the news of Guardiola's imminent arrival means that Pellegrini, you know, may well throw caution to the wind for the rest of the season. You know, why not? He's going anyway. Just go for it. What's the worst that can happen? And I think a City win here will be good for the title race in general, because it means Arsenal and Tottenham stay in touch. It'll still be a 5-point gap, depending on the, you know, how results go. But it keeps everything that little bit more entertaining, I think, in the top four. But yeah, I'd say that's probably the biggest game of the weekend, followed by Sunday's Sunday's trip when United go to Chelsea. I don't know if any of you watched the United Stoke game the other day. It was like watching a completely different team. United were almost pleasing on the eye, I think. You know, Rooney, he's got 7 in 7. Marshall scored a great goal, which I think had Vardy not scored would easily be the one that everyone was talking about. They clicked. Mata looked better again. And that's a Stoke side that, you know, you don't really write off anymore. Mark Hughes, I mean, they've just spent their record purchase, Jenny and Buller, I think, 18.3 million as well. So they're throwing money around now. They're contenders. And United made them look very average, which I don't think you could say they've done in a while.
Yeah, and just when Chelsea seemed to be getting the news monkey off its back with Mourinho gone and undefeated under Gus Hiddink, John Terry comes out and reveals that he's not going to be at the club next year in a fit of pique, which doesn't seem to have gone down too well at the Bridge.
No, it doesn't. Part of me thinks it's strange. I don't know if the club were waiting for a good time to announce it, or if they weren't going to announce it, or wait till the end of the season and maybe change their mind. I was reading a story that apparently Terry just let it out in a mix zone after a game, just walking through and discussing it.
That's what happened. That's how it was released.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe he, you know,
maybe he wants the City Group. Maybe he wants the City Group to sign him and send him to play for Melbourne City, and he can have a crack at.
I think he'll go to the MLS. I think if he's gonna go anywhere, I mean, obviously China's going crazy at the minute, but I think, you know, it's not going to appeal to him so much. I think America's tried and tested. Gerrard, Beckham, Lampard, they pay good money. It is still competitive. I think if he leaves Chelsea, that's pretty much the only place he'll go. But yeah, you're right, Rob. It's a strange one. I don't know quite why Chelsea are so keen to farm established players out of the team. You look at United, for example, Paul Scholes, Ryan Giggs, they were allowed to stay there, and Scholes even retired and then came back. Mm-hmm. But Chelsea just seemed to their credit, I think it will be a business decision at the same time, but they do make it a very clean break of that's it.
But that is the combustible nature of the club, isn't it? This is the club under Roman Abramovich that's had Mourinho there on two occasions, famously successful, and then drops off the cliff. It seems to me that Terry has finally spent all of his political brownie points, and at the end of the day, Roman Abramovich has decided that he can't have him in the club, and he's made the decision. I mean, as an observer from afar, you can only think that's the way that it's rolled, because, you know, he has been close to Mourinho, and he's going to resent this behaviour within the dressing room that clearly was led by players like John Terry, and ultimately he's not the sort of guy that has a lot of sympathy for people who don't do things his way. We're on NTS News Talk Sport. You're listening to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgeley, and we're talking to Ben Soro Perez about European football and the Premier League. Ben, just with a couple of the other big games, because there are some other important games this weekend. I'm seeing Spurs just creeping along. White Hart Lane, they've got Watford, who were very good against Chelsea during the week.
Yes, they were. I caught the first, maybe about the first hour of that game. And it wasn't, you know, for a nil-nil, it wasn't the most dull 0-0 you could imagine.
Igalo had an absolute sitter off his head that should have been in the back of the net.
Yeah, very much so. I was looking into it a bit today, actually, and the remarkable thing I took from that was, despite the fact it was fairly even, Chelsea didn't actually have a shot on target until, I think, the 61st minute or something like that. So, you know, again, Costa's more interested in fighting opponents. I'm intrigued to see how long he has left at the club now. I don't think they're particularly committed to him. They bought Pato in loan. They tried to farm out Falcao, but they couldn't for injuries.
Have you ever known a more immature player to play on the international stage?
Ooh.
He does seem to do Joey it every Barton. Single week, doesn't he?
Joey Barton's right.
Joey Barton and Michael Brown.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, no.
Good company.
Yeah, it's unnecessary, though. If you're Chelsea, you've spent that money on a goal scorer. When he came in and knuckled down initially and scored the goals, everything was fine. I don't know if this is because he isn't scoring the goals, so he's doing this instead, or if he just can't control his temper. But relating that to John Terry and obviously Hiddink only being there till the end of the season, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the decisions are being made by whoever's going in there next. There were rumours this week that Pellegrini's a surprise contender once his time's up at City. Don't think he's done a bad job. Diego Simeone, they remain pretty keen on, but I don't know where else they're going to go. And obviously, they're pretty huge decisions either way.
What about the other end of the table, Ben? If you're a fan of Sunderland or Newcastle, Norwich, Swansea, anything in the transfer window that would give you hope that you're having a crack? I know Villa's given up.
Newcastle have spent a lot of money, but they were atrocious again against Everton. I don't know if quite what's going on there, but they lost 6-0 behind closed doors to Sunderland. They were easily rolled over by Everton again, 3-0 in the week. So they've got a click somehow, but for me, I think they're a bit of a lost cause. And Swansea, on a completely different tangent, they signed Alberto Palocci. If anyone's played Football Manager, they will appreciate that this little guy will take you from obscurity to the Champions League in about 3 or 4 seasons. Now, whether or not he does that in real life is anyone's guess, but I've got a bit of a soft spot for him.
Interesting game during the week in Spain for Australians, Barcelona and Valencia. I mean, there's a number of fronts we can talk about this, but we're all feeling a bit for Matty Ryan, who cops 7. Not much fun in any of that. They also missed a penalty, Barcelona, but there's obviously another reason why we should bring that up, and that's the memes in social media taking the mickey out of Gary Neville. That was interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a pundit, you know, you're paid to get out there and not run your mouth to an extent, but you say controversial things, you boost the viewers and all the rest of it. And there's something flying around that apparently Neville said, you see teams go to the Nou Camp and get beat 5-6 or 7-0. Barca are a good side. Well, they're a great side even. But if I was involved with a team who got beat 7-0 there, I wouldn't be able to look my family in the eyes anymore.
Ouch.
So I wonder how he's coping.
I like it's great when these things happen. I did enjoy a couple of in particular a couple of tweets. One from Paddy Power. We'll just give them a bit of a plug. They just simply tweeted a can of 7-Up.
Thanks, Ben. Yet again, a great report on the Premier League and a little look at Gary Neville's travails in La Liga. Next up, Stoppage Time with Mark Van Aken.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box to Box. And Mark Van Aken, the fourth official, signals there are 10 minutes to go in Stoppage Time. So I hope you got some chunky news for us. What's on in Stoppage Time?
Well, you did touch on this in my first segment. The Matildas will be afforded the same standards of travel and accommodation regularly enjoyed by the Socceroos during their next World Cup appearance in 2019, of course, should they make it, after Football Federation Australia agreed to federal government required improvements for gender equality in professional sports. Business class flights and more luxurious accommodation will be offered to Australia's senior women's national team should it qualify for the World Cup in France. Following threats of funding cuts from Sports Minister Susan Ley, the FFA confirmed its support for the introduction of such measures for the next World Cup, but ruled out providing improved travel conditions for the Matildas in other major international tournaments and fixtures, including the 2018 Women's Asian Cup. I kind of concur with this, guys, but there's also come down to some commercial considerations. And actually, before you answer that, Michael, some other news that just came out last night, again in the Fairfax media, sticking in-house. Rio 2016, Christina Keneally slams Australian Olympic Committee for athlete flight rules. The crux of it, obviously the former Basketball Australia boss and Premier of New South Wales, she's kind of had a subtle go at, not a non-too-subtle go, at Qantas, being the sponsor of the AOC, saying these national bodies are locked into sending their athletes on Qantas, which is obviously a pretty high-cost airline. She's saying if we were allowed to shop around, we could probably get ourselves a lot better deals. But because a business class flight on Qantas is about $8,000 versus about $2,000 for an economy, when if you jump on a Air New Zealand...
Is she fair income? I mean, I've got to jump in here. I mean, for a person who ran a state to ask a question like
that... Did she do that?
Well... Yes, she did. She was the Premier of New South Wales.
I knew that she was the Premier. I didn't know that she ran the state.
Oh, okay. Well, good point. I think she may have suggested or thought she did when she was the Premier. So I'm going to go with that. But the point, as you know, I am making is that in the commercial world, if you get a sponsor throwing in a stack of money, and we talked about this a week or two ago, the Socceroos struggles to get a shirt sponsor. Why would you then suddenly allow your team to go travelling on other airlines?
Yeah, but I understand her point, because again, if you've got 11 or 12 people heading off to Rio for the Boomers and the Opals, that's 24. And if you can go and say, you can basically put them on a business class seat on, say, Air New Zealand for a couple of $1,000 less, that's great.
She doesn't.
And what you would do, the public doesn't need to know that. It's all below the line stuff.
You don't think Air New Zealand would get some publicity out of it?
Well, no, because they're not going to probably get Koshy and the crew down there as they jump off the plane. Anyway.
But, Mark, I think the point that I would like to make is that I think everyone agrees with the quality. I think it's, in principle, a very good thing. But the commercial reality is a bit different to that. And I think that's what's actually a little bit forgotten. And you might get criticised as a male saying something like that. But, it would be tough. If the FFA had to front up with business class airfares every time the Matildas went somewhere, that would be a hard thing to cop based on the revenue they generate from the Matildas. I think that's lost a little bit.
Yeah, look, this is a start. And speaking of commercial imperatives, I do want to give our great sponsors, Chemist Warehouse, another little plug. Given that we're talking about the Olympics, then the Olyroos, they're not going to Rio. We know the Matildas might be. So if you want to go to Rio, thanks to Swiss, they're giving away two double passes to the Olympics. All you've got to do is purchase any Swiss vitamin from Chemist Warehouse and visit swiss.com.au to enter. I urge you. We can't enter Edge, Mark.
We can't? Come on. I need another trip to Rio.
Hey, Rob, how cheap are the prescriptions at Chemist Warehouse?
$5.20, mate.
From
every
$5.20.
Cheapest ever. See,
my Nexium isn't $5.20.
You know your details.
You speak to your people. I need some help. Anyway, moving on. The former president of the German Soccer Federation can continue to refer to Qatar as a cancerous growth of world football, at least until a final ruling by a German court. A Dusseldorf court ruled Tuesday that Theo Schwarzenegger was within his right to free speech, but the judge said he wanted more time to study opposing arguments before making a final ruling on April 19. The Qatar Football Association filed a civil lawsuit against Schwarzenegger after he made the statement in a radio interview in June, calling the description unacceptable slander and vilification. And because they're short of a quid, Qatar, they're actually trying to sue the poor bloke for $154,000 Aussie dollars. I think it's 100,000, might be francs or euros over there.
Moving on. Not much of a story.
I like it.
No.
You're such a Qatar supporter, Michael. It's amazing, amazing stuff. England, this is the big story of the week we've kind of forgotten about. England will reportedly play Australia in one of three warm-up games for Euro 2016, two of which will take place away from Wembley. The FA is finalising plans to take one friendly fixture to England's northeast, so obviously talking Newcastle or Sunderland, another to the northwest in the request of... I got that wrong, didn't I? No, I got it right, sorry. At the request of manager Roy Hodgson, who wants to recreate a tournament feel. We want the Socceroos at Wembley, don't we, Michael?
Sure, we absolutely do.
There's 25 million Aussies living in
London. Let's just go back to Upton Park.
I was there.
Same result last
night. I was there.
Yeah.
I was there. It was fantastic. It was the greatest London taxi ride of my life to get there on time, but I was there.
3-1.
Fantastic, and it was really, really great. And it'll be a great event, and I reckon the Poms might take it a bit more seriously this time.
They might. In fact, Danny Mills has just been out in Australia for Fox Sports, and he did captain the English side that infamous night, I guess, from a Three Lions perspective. So according to The Guardian, the Socceroos game against England will be played on May 27, as I said, in Sunderland or Newcastle. Manuel Adebayor's eagerness to stay fit during his 5-month exile from the professional game led him to organising high-standard matches on a whim back in Togo to ensure he was in proper condition to return to the EPL this month, reports The Guardian. The former Arsenal, Man City, Tottenham Hotspur striker, who'd been without a club since cancelling his contract with Spurs in September, came off the bench for Palace on Tuesday, but was unable to prevent his new side slipping to a fifth successive Premier League defeat. Not a bad effort, Rob, just making his own little pre-season campaign over there in Africa.
Yeah, mate, it sounds good. I'll go with whatever you say about the subject, mate.
I think Ben Sorry Perez, our Brighton and Hove insider, has a funny story about...
What is it? Keep going.
No, about Emmanuel Adebayor. I think he had a gold car. From
how do you pronounce that, mate?
Emmanuel Adebayor.
That's better.
Thank you. Hey, but no, he knows a bit about that.
That's okay. Good.
He hasn't got a microphone, though, so we're going to have to...
No, he hasn't.
He's still here in the corner. Former Liverpool manager Brendan Rodgers has revealed he invited Jurgen Klopp to his home to help hand over the reins at Liverpool to the German earlier this season. The Northern Irishman was sacked earlier this season, as we know. But when his high-profile replacement arrived, he tried to ensure as smooth a transition as possible. He told BN Sport, "I remember when Klopp first got the job and we sat down, we spoke at my house." Very gracious of Brendan Rodgers, was it not, Rob?
Absolutely. It was very generous of him. And Jurgen Klopp is a statesman in the game, and it's nice to hear him speak well.
Do you think Jurgen would have asked him, why did you sign all those Southampton players?
I reckon he probably would have, yes, very specifically.
I would have.
Bruno Fornaroli, the prickly pear, El Tuna, from Melbourne City, has, of course, been in stunning form for the Melbourne outfit so far this season, and his performances have attracted interest from Nacional in his native Uruguay. City have refused to be drawn in reports linking the star with a return to South America. The Montevideo-based outfit Nacional are in the market for a new striker after Ivan Alonso was sold to River Plate on Tuesday. Fornaroli has been in stunning form since signing for City last August, leads the A-League scoring charts with 14 goals in 17 appearances. As he said, City have remained tight-lipped. Surely the juggernaut of City Football Group do not let this one slip, do they?
They've let a few slip.
Who?
You tell me.
As in Melbourne City?
Yeah, exactly. Off the top of your head. Name one.
Well, no, what... Putting me on the spot, Michael, you name one.
Well, you...
No, they've obviously let guys like Partolu go this week, but they're players they want to go. David Williams is gone. But to let the superstar of the competition, a guy who's on the verge of becoming a household name in this country, surely enough will happen.
The big one they let slip was Frank Lampard.
Exactly.
They had him.
Well, they didn't let that slip. That was out of their hands. I mean, that was FFA basically saying, no, you couldn't do it, as was touched
David
on
Villa.
Early on the show.
Let him go. He came to Melbourne and didn't like it.
Yeah, but hang on.
He didn't like the sweep.
He left Melbourne City. He didn't leave the City Football... Hey? I'll let you two chat over there. He didn't leave the grasp of the City Football Group, David Villa. He, of course, just went back to New York because he wanted to get back with his family.
He didn't like the suite at Crown Towers. That's what I heard.
Well, they should have put it up in Harry Kewell's pad, which has still got a few dollars owing, I think, on it from his time at Melbourne Heart, as they were at the time. Pep Guardiola may feel like he's watching a German amateur match at some Premier League stadiums.
Is there a Jeep still there, I wonder?
According to Dietmar Hamann, Hamann says Guardiola is leaving the best league in the world by walking away from the Bundesliga and may find the experience of English football underwhelming, can you believe it? Guardiola will depart Bayern Munich at the end of the season to take the helm, of course, at Man City, replacing Manuel Pellegrini after announcing his decision not to sign a new Bayern deal. But the former Liverpool, Bolton and City player, Hamann, has warned the highly rated tactician to prepare for a rude awakening in the Premier League. Is the Premier League underwhelming, guys? Very quick answer.
No, I don't think so.
Bundesliga is the best league in the world? Come on.
No, this is the best competition in the world right now, the most entertaining.
I agree with you. Didi Hamann, great player, obviously on our shores only a couple of weeks ago, but I don't know what he's on, Ron.
Neither do I. What I know is you've been on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. That was Mark Van Aken with Stoppage Time. We'll look forward to talking to you. We'll do it all again next week.